the Daytime Confidential podcast, brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, Lee and Finn reunite on B&B, Jake is shot on Days, Ava learns the truth on GH, and is Ashlyn really dead on Y&R? Stay tuned. Acles, welcome back.
Hey, hey.
Joshua Baldwin, welcome.
Yo, yo, yo.
Happy birthday, Mr. Baldwin.
Oh, Lord.
It's your birthday weekend, so everybody who's listening, make sure that you congratulate Joshua on his birthday on Twitter. You can find him at DrJoshua09. Send him your birthday wishes this weekend. Well, I guess it will be after the fact when this actually goes live. So wish him your belated birthday wishes on Twitter this week.
Thank you, Marilyn Kerr.
There you go. Diving into what took place this last week on The Bold and the Beautiful, I got a text from Josh this last week, and he was like, have you watched B&B yet? And I'm like, no. He was like, well, some stuff happened, and I'm surprised the show still exists. So I was like, okay, it can't really be that bad, can it? So I turned it on. And I'm pretty sure we now have a 100% lock for Soap Opera Scenery Chewer of the Year The Bold and the Beautiful, because Finn did more soap opera scenery chewing this last week than anyone since Jack Devereaux on Days of Our Lives.
Oh, you need to stop it with Jack Devereaux.
Jack Devereaux ate Salem and consumed it in multiple gulps. And Finn was here to tell you, hold my mic. And he went after it. And oh my God, that was some of the worst acting I've ever seen. Josh, what'd you think of Finn this last week on The Bold and the Beautiful?
The first 15 seconds of Monday's episode locked up that award. He unhinged his jaw and swallowed all of CBS Daytime whole. There wasn't a stick left. There wasn't no kindling. There wasn't nothing. They had to call IKEA, get all those sets rebuilt.
There wasn't an insurance commercial left either.
No, it wasn't. I hope they got their liberty, because, oof. He does so well when he's lying in bed and he's doing the facial expressions. Sometimes they go over
when
the top.
When he doesn't speak, you mean?
It's the walking and the talking, because it's not just the talking. The first 15 seconds was also the walking and him leaning in while he was growling. It was just, it hurt physically. It was physically painful.
Listen, it is a good thing that we do not do Performer of the Week episodes, because Melody is a reoccurring guest, because if she was on here regularly and we still did Performer of the Week episodes for longtime listeners, you may want to go back and listen to some of those. She had a checkbox.
If I still gave them out.
If Melody Acles still gave out checkboxes, that would have been deserving of one, and would have locked it in for the rest of the year. Mel, what'd you think?
I think I saw bite marks on poor Kim LeBrown in that scene, because she was trying. She was trying to growl. And it wouldn't happen. It wasn't. Bless his heart, Lord, in the morning. Oh, my goodness. Oh, I said, oh, Lord. It's just y'all in this scene, and I think she disappeared because
she went on the run from him, not the police.
Seriously, there's a second scene that week of this past week where he puts his hands on Sheila's neck to try to strangle her, and she so very calmly, almost see her rolling her eyes, just grabs that syringe and goes boop.
Right?
But that was sorry, baby.
You knew something was going on because she was too calm. And anytime Sheila Carter is calm, that's your ass. Like,
oh, yeah. Right there.
She got a plan. You going down. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't really know how Sheila picks up Finn's dead weight off the ground and puts him back in bed and tucks him in, but it's Sheila, so we ain't going to question it. You know, Kimberlyn Brown is amazing. And I think the whole week was great in terms of her. The story from Monday to Friday is so ridiculous. Like, the number of Mack trucks you could drive through the holes in this story, I can't. Can we talk about Finn? Just, he's on that plane with Bill, and he keeps calling Steffi, just like, hey, I'm not dead, surprise. What?
And he has all of his full strength back all of a sudden. With 30 seconds later, he was still limping. And I'm like, I don't understand how you went from limping to on the plane, fully dressed, to running in Monaco. I'm confused.
And somebody get those poor kids a therapist, because they've been told daddy was dead. And I know they didn't have a chance to talk to those kids because Ridge and Taylor just had found out like 10 minutes earlier. And so suddenly those kids show up. I'm like, hey, daddy, what? I'm sorry. And then the acting again. They no tears. They know nothing.
What did you
think? I know
think
we
of...
only got 30 minutes on this show, but well, 19 without.
You've got 18 minutes if you're lucky with commercials.
I know, but we got to flesh out more story, y'all.
But that's the Bold and the Beautiful's problem.
This was even more bold than normal. This was even more. For him to go to just skip across the pond with Bill in tow. And then suddenly they're just there, and the kids and everybody's happy. Okay, the only person who reacted appropriately to me was Krista Allen. I thought she was almost giggly, crying, didn't know how to react, and that's how you would react if somebody was alive that you thought was dead. At least she gave something. The rest of them, I just thought it was just like, oh, pass the cheese.
You think of Lee and Finn's reunion?
I like Lee. I still don't understand why Bill to the Spencer picked somebody up out of the garbage and took him home and sat him on the sofa. But I like their reunion. I like that Sheila basically pushed Mike off as she would, and then Mike went upside Lee's head, and then Lee grabbed. I like that Lee's fierce. Like, Lee went after Sheila a few weeks ago, and I thought that was fierce. Little spoiler alert. It doesn't really tell you much of anything. Somehow Lee ends up, I think, in Monaco, and Lee and Steffi go at it, which is what I was. Steffi should be pissed. They should all be angry at Lee for keeping the fact that he was alive a secret for all those weeks, even before Sheila came in. So I hope that plays out.
Before we move on, what did you guys think of the fact that once again Sheila makes an escape?
It's Sheila. Well, she's gonna get away. As the primary villain of this soap opera, we have to find a way to keep her going, to keep her alive. So you knew that she was going to get away, and they weren't paying enough attention to her. Like, you really think them little bed sheets in the room was going to keep Sheila locked away? Come on now.
Come on.
She didn't escape so many other worse things, so she had to get away. And I still need her to make a little trip down to Genoa City and show her face to Lauren before she leaves. So...
yes. That needs to
happen. That's
Lauren,
the thing that
Lauren
I need.
Lauren don't know she's alive yet, I just need her to pop in and say, hey, girl. At least that's all.
Can you imagine the double whammy of Phyllis, Sheila, and Ashley having to deal with the reality that not only is Diane alive, but Sheila is alive?
Sheila walk up in there and say, now let me show you what a real villain is. Diane's a manipulator, but I'll kill you.
There you go. Well, let's talk a little bit about The Young and the Restless. The Talk's Natalie Morales will be guesting on The Young and the Restless. She will be playing an investigative reporter, and Nikki is basically getting her to help find some dirt on the aforementioned Diane. On this week's show, though, there wasn't as much Diane, Phyllis, and Nikki goodness as last week for me, but we sure got a lot of Ashland. I guess my question is, do you guys think that he's really dead? So far, we haven't seen a body, right?
Right.
And Chance the Whopper is investigating, and he's not proven to be that competent in the past. I mean, most soap detectives...
He's the police in Genoa City. They don't.
Police are not competent. For a moment, I'm like, is Chance involved in a cover-up with Ashland? The thought crossed my mind. But then he's also a little bit too how do I put this? He's a little bit too earnest in his pursuit of Nick and Victoria, which is a whole nother topic that we have to get to. So I just want to ask, do either of you think, or do each of you think, that Ashland is actually dead? Josh, you first.
I didn't think he was dead, but now I kind of maybe do, because of the way that they have this shifted a little bit, and I'm not hating it, where it now is starting to look like Victor got his goons to take Ashland's body, perhaps, and put it in that car in the ravine. That's where I think, that's where I thought they were going towards the end of the week on Thursday and Friday, that Nicholas is being smart. I like to see smart Nicholas, and saying things are never clear or straightforward when Victor Newman is involved. And Victor and Michael clearly are, there's some secret there. I just, maybe he ends up alive, but if you go to Robert Newman's post that we put up on DC this week, he said those were the last scenes he filmed where he's on the, where he, it doesn't mean that he won't come back,
right?
But those were the last scenes he filmed, and now it's 6 weeks later. So we know for at least 6 weeks there's no Ashland on screen.
I just, so, okay, I'm not sure if he's still alive. We know how these soap interviews go, and there's always very specific nuance to the statements that are let out.
Absolutely.
That give plenty, like give a Mack truck plenty of room to steamroll through.
Absolutely.
For them to come back. Mel, do you think he's dead?
No, and it's because we don't have a body. And if you, there's nobody on a soap opera, somebody's going to come back alive.
That's true. Happen.
I absolutely do think that Victor had his goons make it look like he was at the bottom of the ravine and the car and all of that. I absolutely think that's what's going on. But it's going to be a case of, oh, it was the wrong body, or, oh, he got out, or, you know, something. It's going to be, we told y'all that's what it was, but that's not what actually happened. So I definitely think there's more happening there. But I want to touch on something else you said.
Please.
So, you know, you was talking about old girl from The Talk is going to be on.
Yep.
Helping Nikki investigate Diane. Okay. I think it's nice that, you know, they're trying to do the whole synergy thing, but like Barbara Crampton wasn't available.
Mm.
We couldn't get Leanna Love back.
Come on.
Because she would be all over that story. I'm sorry. Anyways, continue.
I hear you. No, you're right.
We talked a lot about Finn on The Bold and the Beautiful eating scenery alive, but I also think that it is only fair to mention that one of my favorite The Young and the Restless actors didn't have a stellar week as well. I've always been a fan of Joshua Morrow. I love him in his scenes with Sharon Case, and Nick and Sharon are my heart. I love them. They have amazing chemistry. But let me tell you, folks.
Oh, Jesus.
Nick and Victoria's conversations were not good. Not good. I don't know what happened, but it was like Nick was in some sort of robot mode, and I'm not sure if the dialogue was just that bad or they didn't write enough dialogue, and so he had to speak slowly in order for like them to fill up the right amount of time, or if it was bad acting. But this last week with Nick and Victoria, because Victoria's dialogue was equally difficult, it was not good. And I texted Josh about it when we were talking about Finn, and I was like, Finn is not the only one who had a rough week. And it's not, for me, Joshua Morrow is one of those actors who I always enjoy, but his storylines and his acting are ones that I'm like, okay, they're normally solid, but they're not necessarily turning shit into sugar acting. This last week was rough. Josh, what did you think of the Nick and Victoria dynamic and the acting that we watched?
The aftermath of the showdown, which I hope we can touch on in just a second, the misrepresentation of that showdown that's happening all over
screen. Go for it.
So first of all, you're right that the conversation that, or the whatever that was between Nicholas and Victoria after Ashlyn fell, it was all bad. It was really bad. Like, it was noticeably bad. And I'm with you. I'm not sure what was going on that day. I'm not sure what the direction was, but none of it was good. Then we move, then we bounce forward, and Victor suddenly shows up, and he and Nicholas and Victoria are talking to Chance, and then later on we're at Newman, and then later on we're even having Sharon talk to Nicholas about this, and they're all saying, first of all, Victoria said Ashlyn broke in. He did not break in. She let him in. Then she says, he attacked me. I saw him grab her, but I didn't necessarily think it was an attack. It's assault. It's absolutely assault. But it was represented like Nicholas had to pull him off of her and save her life.
I feel like there's some JT PTSD going on with her.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And if they play that, that's fine. But the story is being told either, I hope it's being purposely manipulated so that it makes Nicholas look like it was self-defense. But when Nicholas hit Ashlyn, it wasn't self-defense. Victoria said he grabbed me and Nicholas punched him and then he fell and hit his head. He didn't pull Ashlyn off of Victoria. So I hope this is purposeful manipulation, because if it's not, it's just oddly bad storytelling, or that storytelling where they're trying to make us think something happened that we didn't see.
Mel, what did you think of Nick and Victoria?
That was rough. That whole sequence after Ashlyn is dead in quotation marks was rough. And it was a lot of, you know, well, we have to get the story right. What's that story? How many times are we going to repeat it? And I was like, all right. And I thought it was different, at least, that they were like, okay, we're for sure, we're going to call the cops. No. Let's just call Chance. Let's call Chance and see what's going on. Because not me. I'd call Victor Newman. I don't have to
clean this shit up.
I'm not messing around with these police. I'm not doing none of that. We're going to call Victor and call it a day. But I was like, okay, we're going to go this route. And then all of a sudden Victor shows up and I was like, okay, well, I got my wish. But those, all those scenes after Nicholas going outside and taking a walk, why would you leave the dead body by itself?
I'm saying.
Didn't even make no sense. That ain't common sense. So I was like, I don't know why we're doing any of this. I don't necessarily think Victoria and Nick have that super sibling bond like they should. Like, I know they're writing it that way, but it's not something I really see.
Uh-uh.
So I kept waiting for Nick to go to Sharon. Like, I was like, maybe he's gonna go to the house and see her, you know, because that's kind of a recurring thing between the two of them, is that when life gets too hard, one of them is gonna go see each other. Yep. So I was waiting for it to happen, and they finally see each other at the coffee house. And Sharon Case makes Joshua Morrow better. They just do. It's just
right.
I was waiting for it to happen, and we got it a little bit later in the week, and I was like, I kind of wish this would have happened sooner.
Let me throw something out to both of you. There was a moment when Nicholas and Victoria are in the house, and she says she's going to call Chance. And she says, I have to go to the kitchen to call Chance. And I immediately thought, this is not landline days. Why are you going to the kitchen? Did she go to the kitchen and call Victor? Or call the security?
But why would she need to call Victor if...
But it would, why would, it would she, answer why she Victor need... would show up.
Well, but I thought they explained why Victor was there. They've had people following her.
They have, but the security didn't call him before. Like, Nicholas's point on Friday to Sharon was, he just showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where did he come from? And maybe I could be very, very...
I assume that whenever you have henchmen shadowing your children, they're checking in. Like, I just assume that. Like,
I assume so, too. But Ashlyn, like, why didn't the henchmen come in and help?
Well, that may depend on the orders. It may just be orders to defend it. I just assumed, and maybe I'm wrong. You could be right. How do I put this? On recent episodes, Josh, I feel like you've put a little bit more emphasis on small details, like her going into another room. in order to try and explain things that are otherwise just let's take it for granted explanations. And I'm not sure that I have the confidence in the Young and the Restless writing team to put that nuance in. I feel like they're just going to write a story that gives us stuff that we just take for granted as soap viewers.
I agree with you. I know I'm reaching because I want this show to be better. And so I think I see things like, wait, there's a thing. Because on some other shows, if that thing had happened, it would mean something. But I agree with you. I don't know that I believe that little things that I'm seeing mean something. I think I'm reaching because I want it to be better.
Mel, the other primary plot this last week on The Young and the Restless was Sally and Adam. What are you thinking of of her overhearing him admit and her decision by the end of the week to stay at Newman?
So I know we've been talking about scenery triggers, but that is not what's happening over on Sally and Adam, because baby Courtney Hope is giving us everything that needs to be given. She is acting all the way through this. I appreciate it. I love it. But here's my but. I'm so tired of seeing Sally beg Adam to take her back. I watched that girl beg 4 times in 3 episodes. To take her back. Oh, you don't mean it. I know you're just doing this to protect me. I want to do everything. I want to live my life and be with you and all that. Girl, if you don't stand up, because I know you're not in here begging Adam Newman to take you back like this. Stop it. Stop it right now. I can't stand it. I can't stand to see a woman begging like that. Girl, go get this bag. And then you tried to quit. You tried to quit your COO, CEO, whatever initial job it is at Newman Media, whatever the hell that is. You tried to. Why would you do that? It's so dumb. Oh, I can't meet with him, so I'm going to just be broke. No. Get a bag. Begging like Keith Sweat. I was so disgusted. I was so disgusted. Stop it. Let her be Phyllis. That's what I want for Sally. I want Sally to be Phyllis right around 1999. I need it to happen.
Let's talk a little bit about General Hospital, because for me this last week, General Hospital was the shit. First of all, Nicholas admitting to Ava that he slept with Esme and the seething. But then by Ava, and then it was like, wait a second, I've got other people I need to deal with. And she goes to Esme and has the confrontation with Esme. I was here for it. And then by Friday's episode, Ava was like, this is all very specific. You, like she said, you did this and this, and she just broke it down. And she's like, something else is going on here. And I don't know what it is, but I am on to something. And I cheered. It was like, this is the Ava that I love. This is the Ava that I need more of. She knows that she's been gaslit. She doesn't know who is behind it, but she knows that Esme is a part of it. And I was here for it. Josh, what did you think?
Maura West said, lest y'all forget what a queen looks like, let me just show y'all. They have had Ava somewhat declawed, somewhat backburnered for quite a while. And this just put her front and center. And let's name it correctly. Nicholas did not choose to admit. Esme kind of forced his hand. And I don't know what the hell they have done to Nicholas Cassadine, but this weeping, whimpering.
Oh, Nicholas Cassadine has not been Nicholas Cassadine since for a very long time.
No, this is true.
They have not written him as Nicholas in the better part of 2.5 years.
I agree. I thought the confrontation with Nicholas was wonderful because Maura West did her like Carly Jerome, Ava Tenney kind of thing at the very beginning where she's just barking up. She did that little Carly thing that she does where she gets mad. But then it was quiet.
Oh, the quiet is so good.
When she looked at him dead in the eyes and said, I will burn you to the ground. I just thought, oh.
Listen, watching her is like The Quiet Place 2. It like it's just oof. When Mara West goes quiet, it is pure soap opera bliss.
I agree with you. It's not the same thing, but we're talking about Kimberlyn Brown earlier. When Sheila goes quiet, pay attention. And Ava got up in Esme's face and got quiet again and reminded her who she is. If you toy with me, I will make sure they never find you while you're still breathing.
Which was interesting.
Got right up on her face.
But it was also interesting because Ryan had said earlier that there was no place that Esme could hide. And now Ava is saying, I will dispose of you and no one will find you, which is in the world, in the realm where Ava is saying, I'm onto something, I know I'm right. But you have the two polar opposites basically saying things that contradict. I loved it. I loved the contrast. Loved it.
Yeah,
loved
it was really good. It was really good. And this adds on to it, I think. If you have those scenes with the confrontations, and you had Spencer and Esme as well, and next week on Monday, it looks like we're going to get Spencer and Nicholas. But to me, the standout scene was very, very short. It was after Spencer first testified and Ava gets in the line of seats behind him.
Yep.
And Nicholas Chavez is forward, so they're not looking at each other. And Ava says, Spencer Cassadine, you're a lot of things, but yep. An idiot is not one of them now. Just whose side are you on? And Nicholas Chavez did this thing, just a tiny movement,
a twitch
with his mouth.
Almost.
Yeah, which was almost like, now we're getting where I've wanted them to go, which is Ava and Spencer understanding they are similar creatures. I want Ava and Spencer on the same team. And I thought I got that little bit of thing from Spencer where he's like, all right, she got me and we're respecting each other. And I really liked that scene.
Mel, I know that you're not a General Hospital or Days of Our Lives watcher, but boy, I wish you had been able to see Mara West because from an As the World Turns standpoint, I watch Mara West and I think this is what Carly Tenney, I said Tenney out of that habit for our audio issues, but Carly Tenney would have been like if As the World Turns was still going, because I just sit there and I imagine Carly going lethal on Barbara's ass, or Carly going lethal on whatever the new ingenue who is causing her problems is. And I'm just sitting there and I'm like, this is Carly Snyder.
I knew something was going on because, you know, on Twitter, you could see, you know, all the different soaps, everybody's tagging everything. And people kept saying, Mara West, Mara West. I said, uh-oh, they must have finally let us show out again. And I love it. You know, Mara, we've loved Mara for years and years and years. So anytime I get to hear about somebody just being able to take that and go and do their thing, it makes me so happy. And I am at some point going to watch those scenes because y'all know I love me some Mara West. So shout out to her.
If you want to just drop in on General Hospital, this was a good week, at least from the trial and Esme and Ava standpoint. This was a good week. I wasn't so much enthused with the whole, well, I guess we have to cover that. Fuck. I just realized, because that's going to lead to a rant. Before we get to that, though, what did you think of the trial, Josh? Because Spencer testifying for Trina and coming back the second time after and admitting why he snuck out of jail and the possibility that he might go back to jail, and then the DA basically torpedoing his what he thought was going to get Trina off, I thought that was very good. What'd you think?
I agree. I like the whole trial. I said this last week, I miss old school daytime trials where there's an actual courtroom and there are actual witnesses and it goes on for a little bit. I love it. I agree with you about this, particularly Spencer, I thought was really good. But the second time, you're right, when he came back and testified on Trina's behalf. And Nicholas Chavez looked at that camera and said, I'm coming for that second consecutive Emmy. When that little chin quivered and those tears started to well up in his eyes, oof, he got me. He got me all day long. I believed him. I bought him. And the only thing that happened that annoyed me was when he got off the stand and somebody pulled Jocelyn's string and she decided she needed to get up and say, well, finally you did the right thing. Shut up, Jocelyn. Sit down.
Speaking of Jocelyn, that is going to bring me to my rant, which I was like, what the hell? I started General Hospital. I did not like Sonny as the mob. I was mad. No one could ever beat him. Sonny under Guza, Jill Farron Phelps never ever lost. I will give Dan and Chris and Dan credit that they have balanced Sonny out more. But you mean to tell me that after all of these years, Alcazar, the Scorpios, Taggart, Hannah, whatever her name was, I can't remember her last name, Faith Roscoe, the three different Jeromes, Manny Ruiz, Scotty Baldwin, and many others, all of them have tried to bring down Sonny Corinthos. And Jocelyn is the one who gets him on tape, beating somebody up with charges that could actually, like, that if it was submitted, charges could actually stick. And now Sonny is having to go like a bitch to Carly with his tail between his legs and ask her to stop her daughter from turning the tape in. My, how the mighty have fallen. But of all people that could potentially do Sonny in, it's Jocelyn? I was like, what the? Where is Faith Roscoe? Where is Ted King as an Alcazar? Where are the Scorpios? I was like, oh.
It is very Jocelyn.
It is very Carly. It is very Jocelyn. It just goes to show that they are truly turning Carly or Jocelyn into the next generation's Carly.
There's no doubt about that.
There is no question at this point. Like a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, I was like, maybe she'll be a little bit more of Jax's daughter and a little bit less of Carly. But there's no question now. She is Carly 2.0, and that's just how it's going to be. She is going to win or have the snide, the superior snide, holier-than-thou comment. No matter what she does, she's always going to have it. But yes, Jocelyn could be Sonny's undoing.
It's very much Jocelyn and Carly in particular to be like, everything is okay. You can commit all these crimes, but it's all for right and good until Carly's on the opposite side of it. And it's like, fuck you. Go to jail. I don't give a shit. Be a bitch. Whatever. Bye. And Jocelyn is very much that right now. There's no motivation other than Carly and Nina and whatever. It came out of nowhere. I don't have a problem with it in terms of that it's true to character. I just don't love that this is how they're writing her character.
Let's talk a little bit about Days of Our Lives, because, boy, there's a lot to try and cram into the last 15 minutes of the show. There's so much involving Jake that I, like, just buckle up as I try and give this summary. Jake proposed to Ava, but they didn't get married, but he got her a ring. He was then shot by a day player who was actually very interesting, and I was hoping he would stick around, but from the looks of the way things played out by the end of the week, that day player is not sticking around. Gabby finds out about it before the Demiras find out about it, so she goes to Ava and is like, Ava, you need to pretend that you're actually married to him so that we can get the stock and keep control of Demira Enterprises. Meanwhile, on a side tangent, Kristen has used her leverage over Gabby to get in at Basic Black, which we will circle back to, but I'm just bringing that up because as we're circling back to the Demira side of Jake, finding out about Jake, Kristen is at the Demira mansion telling EJ that she's going to move in when Dr. Rolf comes out of the tunnels and tells them that Jake has died. EJ immediately is like, I need to get over there because I need to take advantage of the shares. He leaves Kristen. Kristen is there, and then all of a sudden Dr. Rolf is, I need your help, and you're going to help me. And the next thing we know, we go to, and this is another thing that we will be circling back to, Jada had said earlier in the week that supposedly the hospital was really good in Salem. We cut to the hospital with Rolf and Kristen and Jake's body. Oh my God, Josh.
And you didn't even get to Allie and Chanel and John.
No. I'm just, we haven't got to that. We will talk about that. I'm right now just talking about the stuff related to Jake.
Okay.
Kristen Demira's and Demira Enterprises.
Well, first of all, let's acknowledge when we see it, an umbrella. That's how many people are involved in all of
Ella,
this.
Ella.
This is an umbrella. And Daze is about to go Demira crazy. And they ramp up the Demiras sometimes, and I'm down for it. I'm here for it, and I know they're about to go sci-fi with Dr. Rolf. But Daze's sweet spot is kind of leaning into the ridiculousness of the sci-fi while also having this P&G family soap stuff weaved in. It's an interesting vibe that there's a sweet spot there for them, and I think that's where they're trying to go here. I would love to know what you think, Luke, because obviously they're going to, 10 years ago, Gary Tomlin and Chris Weitzel gave Daze this gift where they had Kristen go in and stick a syringe in EJ. And then years later, Ron Carlovati has used it to bring back all kind of folks. So are they going to revive Stefan somehow, or are they going to revive Jake? What do you think?
I don't know, but if I was writing this, the money character is Stefan.
I agree with you completely.
Jake is this side character who's a mechanic who, like, we've never really had a lot of great direction with Jake. He just sort of bounces from one woman's bed to another, or one.
And we ain't complaining about half-naked Brandon Barash.
No, we are certainly not complaining about a half-naked Brandon Barash. But as a character, Jake has bounced from one woman to another, or he's bounced from one Demira vote to another. And that's all Jake has done. Stefan, as a character, was much more dynamic. Stefan drove storyline instead of being the character that always followed storyline. So if I was the writer at Days of Our Lives and I had to choose by keeping Brandon Barash on my screen, which of those it would be? I would be going with Stefan.
I agree with you. It makes more impact, particularly as all this ramping up for being the in charge of Demira Enterprises and the clearly being they're trying to gather everybody into the same house, which I like.
Well, not
I
only
think
that,
it becomes very interesting.
It also fills whatever hole there is going to be with Chad. Chad has always been the lame Demira. And he is. There's no question about it. Chad is the lame Demira.
The little Demira that never really could.
The Quartermains have a lame Quartermain. The Cassadines have a lame Cassadine. Chad is the lame Demira. He always
Who's
has.
The lame Cassadine? Is Sam your lame Cassadine?
Sam McCall, of course. And Sorry. So, having Brandon Barash in a more of a role where he can go toe-to-toe with EJ, he can go toe-to-toe with Kristen, all of a sudden that power dynamic and shifting, and I need a sidetrack on here for a second. There was some very unexpected chemistry between Kristen and EJ this last week.
Ooh, it was weird.
It was super weird. And I tweeted this, but I'm like, I wonder if Days of Our Lives would ever try and pull a Game of Thrones with like the Targaryens and then Cersei and Jaime, because Kristen and EJ this last week, and I'm not even saying Kristen and EJ would have to have sex, but like, if they had this unrequited thing where they just go to the edge of the cliff but never cross over, though, there was some weird tension this last week.
Well, I mean, Kristen and Tony were in a relationship long time ago.
Well, I just, like, there was some very unexpected hot sexual chemistry between EJ and Kristen this last week, and I was sitting there scratching my head, and I'm like, would Days of Our Lives ever go that far? Would they be allowed to? Would be the other question.
That's true too. I mean, they're
if
not.
Jonathan they, and Tammy can but, be a solo couple on the guiding light. I'm just saying.
We were talking over here at the house about that when because we were talking about the chemistry between Kristen and EJ, and we got into a whole conversation about Tammy and Jonathan and how that was so divisive. The half the folks loved it, half the folks hated it.
But considering Game of Thrones paved that with not almost gave them a superhighway with not one but two couples that were incestuous, shall we say. And I'm not saying that these two need to be, because technically they're not biologically related. There was just some very unexpected chemistry on Days Agreed. Of Our Lives. On the other front, you mentioned this earlier, Josh. Johnny, Chanel, and
Allie.
That just goes to show how I'm not enthused by that character.
Yeah, we have sort of different opinions about this, but I hear you. I know where you're because this is not a character type that you like anyway.
Correct. It's not a character type that I like. But this week, Chanel made her big choice, which I felt was a little bit anticlimactic. She chose Allie.
Days went there and then immediately put them in the bed. And I thought, if you go, at least they're going there. They're not shying away from it.
Meanwhile, Johnny goes out for a drink and runs into Paulina, and I was like, well, there's a May December. I'm totally joking on that front. I don't want them as a May December.
I think whoever wrote the dialogue with Johnny and Allie over the last couple of weeks when they've been sniping at each other is having the best time. Like, Allie looked at Johnny on Friday of last week and said, I should have absorbed you in the womb. And then this week they were fighting Allie and Chanel own a pie. They own like a bakery. And so they were giving out free samples of pies. And so Johnny was trying to irritate Allie and was helping her with the pies. And Allie's pie was a cherry pie and his pie was a peach pie.
I bet it was.
And then finally Johnny said to Steve, I think, yeah, you don't want Allie's pie. It's a little tart. And she said, did you just call me a little tart? And then they got the pies started flying back and forth. It was just cute. It was snarky and cute. And I thought, they clearly are having fun with each other. I don't think Chanel's going to end up with either one of them eventually. I think that she's chosen Allie, but I don't see that.
So who do you predict that she'll end up with?
That's a good question. I think Chanel,
because there's only so many people in that age group on the show, and at least one of them is gay.
It's true.
A gay man, I should say. Chanel,
it's true. It's possible. I would like to see the chemistry test with Raven Bowens and Robert Scott Wilson as Alex and see what that looks like.
Speaking of which, a week ago Friday, we got Alex introduced, but this was the first full week that we got to see Robert Scott Wilson as this new character. I'm liking the brotherly dynamic between him and Sonny. I loved him giving Bonnie a hard time. And then I was going to call him Ned, to have Justin there and everybody in the family sort of not understanding why he's just sort of coming back to Salem to spend the summer or possibly longer. I thought those were very interesting family dynamics, and it was a little bit fun to see a younger, curious generation that didn't involve Brady.
Yeah, it's about time that there's about 42 little youngins out there that they could have pulled in the Kiriakis world. And I'm glad to see Alex on screen. I think Robert Scott Wilson will get there. Cause I mean, he just was off with Ben just a little while back. So I think that he'll develop some nuance with his portrayal of this. I think he's trying very hard to make sure we know it's not Ben. And I think that sort of attempt to try really hard will sort of wear off and we won't notice it so much. But I liked him I liked him playing with everybody. I liked that they gave him scenes with everybody. This isn't really too much of a spoiler, but next week he and Maggie have some bonding time. So I like that they're playing him with all of the different folks in the household. Now, I'm about to be Luke Kerr and say, if we're going to fill the Kiriakis household, we have filled the Demera household, we have got to get a bigger set for the Kiriakis household. We have got to revamp that living room again, because it's just so dingy and dirty and dingy. And it just, I want them to have a place that's spectacular, like the Demera Mansion is spectacular. If they're going to fill it up, like they're filling up the Demera Mansion.
I agree with you. I love that the Demera Mansion was fixed, but I did not, when I wanted the Demera Mansion to be fixed, I did not expect it to come at sacrificing the Kiriakis Mansion. There needs to always be two rival mansions, like on General Hospital, where you have the Quartermain Mansion and you have the Cassadine Mansion. You have to have two rival mansions on a soap. That being said,
I agree. Now, again, they are working with a nickel and a comb over at Days.
Right.
So they make it stretch as best they can. But
what I thought was interesting about Alexander this week and Robert Scott Wilson is I saw more of what I wish I'd seen in Petey Cortland on All My Children
for
Scott Wilson this week, just in that first week when he's giving people a hard time, he's acting a little bit, how do I put this, bro-ish, but yet also it's obvious that he is used to having money. Petey obviously was a spoiled wealthy kid, but like, I saw more of what I wish I'd been able to see Petey Cortland as on All My Children in Alexander this week. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this evolves. Also, just for a note, I think that it's great that Days of Our Lives has done this, that they brought him on as another character. Any number of soaps have brought various actors back in different roles. I think that this is a good way to keep him on while also giving the Ben and Sierra side of things a breather. Ben as a character without Sierra was not connected to Cor. He was sort of backed into a corner storyline wise in terms of what he could do. This completely lifts all of that Ben weight off of Robert Scott Wilson's shoulders and allows him to potentially flourish as this other character. So I'm very happy with that. Now,
I agree.
As we wrap this thing up, we need to address something, which is Jada's comment about the Salem Hospital being really she goes, "Oh, I've heard that it's a great place." And I put on Twitter, I was like, if I had the choice between Kayla Brady and David Hayward being my doctors, I would choose David Hayward over her any day. Because
did you say playing doctor or as your doctor? As I heard playing doctor.
Let's just say both. but the thing about David Hayward as a doctor is that man, regardless of his ethics, could at least get some shit done. Kayla can't even tell if someone's dead.
Repeatedly. I mean, this is like the fifth time that someone has been pronounced dead and ain't so much dead. Now, in Kayla's defense, she doesn't know that all this Rolf stuff is happening behind the scenes, but it's just bad. Kayla talks about everything. Kayla tells everybody's business.
Right. HIPAA does not apply to Kayla Brady. Final thought, Mel.
I think it was nice to see new sets on The Bold and the Beautiful. We hadn't seen Bill's house in a long time, and they had a new restaurant set, so kudos to Bold.
Josh, final thought?
My final thought is we talked a lot about Mora West, and rightfully so, but Susan Walter said somebody else coming for that Emmy too. She had that scene where she's crouched down and she talked to Harrison while Jack and Summer and Kyle were in the room. And she brought up those tears and smiled and did all that stuff with acting with that little boy. First of all, I thought the whole scene, like the whole room, all of them acted well because they all had the tears. They were all going through it. But Susan Walters was here to tell you, I'm not just here to spar with these bitches over here. I can be grandma. Mm-hmm. And when Kyle let Harrison know that this isn't daddy's friend, this is daddy's mommy, she's your grandmother. Whoo.
Mm-hmm. They played that history well in that scene.
Ooh, it was so good.
Yeah.
It was so well done. And I give Young and the Restless such a hard time most of the time that I want, when I see something that's gold, where I'm like, there it is, somebody's writing this well, I want to point it out. So that was my final thought.
My final thought is, now that Ava is on to Ryan, I feel like we finally made a shift, or we've reached a pivot point in the Ryan and Ava saga, because he's been there, the man pulling Esme's strings for so long now. I can't wait to see where Ryan versus Ava goes, because the last time they went toe-to-toe, it was gripping television, and I'm crossing my fingers that this next time is equally so. On that note, we'd encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DCConfidential. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/DCConfidential. You can find me on Twitter at Luke_Kerr. Josh is at DrJoshua09, and Melody is at Melody Akles. Until next time, so long.
Bye.